Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 311, Leaf, Flower, Song. Tuesday, May 30th, 2023. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. Each time I record an episode, I post show notes, photographs, and links to things I talk about on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Today's episode features the following segments: Yarn Lover at Large, The Front Porch, Taproot Make 9, and Off the Shelf. Hello, everyone, and welcome. It has been a very leisurely and luxurious 5-day weekend here in the Delaware Water Gap, where I had a lot of time off school since we did not use many snow days. And I'm very pleased to be using some of this time at the end of my break to catch up with you via podcasting. It is sunny and warm and very, very dry here at Yin Hu. I'm podcasting for the first time in years from my home. I'm actually at Yin Hu Cha Yuan Silver Lake Tea House, which is my home. We have let go of our little studio in the Castle Inn, and we are currently working on some new digs, but we're not quite there yet. So likely the next few episodes, I will be recording from my home. I have a really nice surround, which should help with some of the road and ambient noise. And hopefully I'll learn a few tips and tricks to make this audio recording as comfortable of a listening experience as it can be for you. Thank you so much for your kind words, your notes, and for staying in touch with me since the last podcast. I have a goal of podcasting twice per month, but for a while now, it's really been once per month. And I'm happy to get these out and share my making news with you. Since I recorded last time, I have been the recipient of an amazing felt garland that was a collaborative effort between Gail Pirinello and Mary Beth Kress, and also MJ and Carol and all the folks at the Battenkill Fiber Mill. And this garland represents contributions made by friends, colleagues, family for the Clean Fleece Project, and also a little special encouragement for me as I make my way through some difficult chemotherapy since I have found out about a return of my cancer diagnosis. As of this recording, I am halfway through. I am 6 treatments into my 12 rounds of treatment. I've slowed down quite a bit. A lot of things are difficult and cumbersome, but I remain active, remain keeping my normal activities as much as possible, doing yoga pretty much every day, getting a lot of time outside. I continue working, I continue crafting, and all of those things help to keep my spirits up and just keep me going in a forward direction. So I want to thank all of you for your contributions and your kindness and for seeing the potential in a project where I see potential. The Clean Fleece Project is pretty much almost there, reaching their goal of $25,000 raised. They have also recently been collecting actual things, actual donations of items, household items perhaps that they can use around the facility. And I'm hoping at some point this late spring or early summer to make a visit and see that progress. And see all of the fine folks who have been working so hard to get something so important underway. I was able to see quite a few friendly faces at Maryland Sheep and Wool Festival. I did travel down for the day. I think I mentioned that I had a bus ticket, so it really kept my energy expense at a minimum. And it was a short day in terms of time at the festival, but it was a beautiful day, a friendly day. The Maryland Sheep and Wool Festival, being in spring, I find to be incredibly optimistic. It's very much focused on sheep, fleece, and hand spinning, and it has a really energetic feel to it. I have visited many times, never more than one day. So it's always been a Saturday. It's always been a bus trip, but it has always been incredibly enjoyable. And this year was no exception. And the weather was spectacular. It was warm and dry and sunny. It wasn't too hot. And it seemed like Saturday was incredibly well attended. I visited a lot with my friend Emily and her husband Jaime, with Sarah, also known as Flanews, and I was able to visit some of my favorite vendors like MJ and Carol and Mary Jane and Megan, and also got to chat with some listeners, Cheryl and Heather and her sister Laura. So it was a great day of visiting and some shopping. I mostly bought food products now that I think about it in retrospect. There was cheese, honey, maple cream, lots of yummy stuff. And the big, exciting purchase that I feel really fortunate to have taken home with me was a quarter of a fleece that Sarah and Emily had actually picked out much earlier that morning in the fleece barn. I was pretty late to do a lot of fleece shopping, so I felt like super treated to this fleece from Shepherd's Hay Farm. The sheep's name is Lenore. I believe this to be a reference to Edgar Allan Poe and his poem, The Raven, because this is a very dark in color fleece. It's the darkest I've ever worked with on a sheep's fleece. It's a Romney Corriedale cross, and some of the other breeds that are listed on the sales slip are Rommeldale, Lincoln, Wensleydale, Border Leicester, and Rambouillet. It has about a 3 to 4 inch staple length. It's an amazing blocky staple. It was a coated fleece, so it's extremely clean. Very few second cuts, very little vegetation or really any inconsistencies in the fleece that I have picked through. And I've picked through all. I had about 1.25 pounds, and I've picked through all of it, opened up the tips, kept it in its blocky shape, and now I am working on scouring the fleece and combing it. And I plan to spin a 2-ply yarn, which will probably be quite fine. The first few batches, I've only washed a little bit of it. The first few batches that I washed, I don't think I got enough grease out. I think I need to use a little more soap to get that grease out and get it to be fluffy and get it to draft a little bit better. So I'll be working on cleaning that in small batches, letting it dry, and keeping everything very organized. This is my first time using combs Flanews was so kind as to send some combs to me so I could start this process. And I think a small amount like this, rather than an entire fleece, is a good place to start. Initially, I had difficulty doing very much combing at one go, but I'm getting a little bit better at doing it. And then I'm just pulling or kind of drafting the roving right off the comb and winding it up into a little nest so that it's ready to spin. I haven't really decided about spinning this yet. I have my Louette wheel, of course, but I really most enjoy yarn, my handspun yarn, when I spin it on a spindle and then I ply it on my wheel. To me, that gives like a nice soft dimension to the yarn. That's a lot of spindle spinning, but summer is on its way, and it's a great way to sit on the porch and take in an evening and just keep spinning and spinning and spinning. So I'll be thinking a little bit more about that. So far, I've thoroughly enjoyed working with Lenore, this fleece, and the beautiful, soft, dark color. And I think this will be certainly enough yarn for a garment project. I'll have to think carefully about what I want to do with it, but I'm really excited to be working with this fleece. The front porch. I've cast on quite a few things since talking to you last about completing the bandit in episode 310. One thing I've cast on and not made much progress is geometry. That's a little cropped top that I'm knitting in Green Mountain Spinnery Cotton Comfort. Hopefully I'll have more to report on that in an upcoming episode. But in this episode, I want to talk to you about the Outside the Socks Craft Along that's being hosted by Joanna of Knitspin Farm. If you've been listening to this podcast, you know that I am a big fan of Joanna's self-striping yarn. I think she does an amazing job. I love her bases. And my friend Emily and I are very fond of making purchases, knitting some socks, and then sending the leftover yarn to each other so we can sort of share the fun. When we met up at Maryland Sheep and Wool, Emily had already divided some fence posts colorway. And this is greens, grays, golds. It's kind of like, you know, looking out over a fence post at a really beautiful field. And we took the time, just a little bit of time, before I had to go to cast on a sock. 64 stitches. I did my usual tubular cast on and started a 1x1 rib. That's about as far as I got when I tucked it into my bag. And then I found out about this Outside the Socks craft along. So I have saved the cast on, and starting on May 26th, which was over this holiday weekend, I started to really go to town on something other than socks. That's the whole point of this craft along, is that you take Joanna's yarn, her self-striping yarn, and you knit, crochet, weave, whatever craft you want to do, something other than socks. And I have decided, since I had the teeny tiniest bit of a cast on of a sock already, to go with a pattern by Carrie Ann Eikenberry called Socks Versus Fingerless Mitts. And this pattern evolved when she had cast on for socks and then decided she didn't really want to knit them, but she already had 64 stitches cast on, and she kind of kept going with it to make some fingerless mitts. So that's what I'm going to do. And I have a gift recipient in mind, who is someone who works at the Cancer Center and has been just extraordinary in lifting my spirits and being the best professional she can be all of the time. So I'm looking forward to knitting those over the course of this month and giving them to her sometime in June, maybe early July. I have also cast on a pair of socks with Gail of Cornwall Yarn Shop's Bear Mountain sock. You've heard me talk about this on the podcast before. This is a 100% Dorset sock yarn. I have the colorway Riverside, which is blues, pinks, and greens. This is a beefy, bouncy, really substantial yarn. I was using my flexi flips that I really like to use for sock knitting. My gauge was absolutely too loose. I was either going to have to cast on significantly fewer stitches or really do something else to tighten up the gauge. So I shifted to my Blackthorn DPNs. These are an acquired taste. They're very polarizing in the world of double-pointed needles, but I like them. And I like the way they can give me a really nice, dense gauge with yarn that it's not sport weight yarn, but because it's so bouncy and beefy, it kind of acts like a sport weight yarn when you're knitting it. And so using these Blackthorn needles, I was able to get a much tighter gauge. I am also making a completely ribbed sock so that it will be nice and stretchy. And I was thinking about the recipient of these socks. And listeners, my recipient is going to be one of you. All you have to do to be in the running for a pair of hand-knit socks by me is to make a contribution via Ko-fi between March 20th and June 21st. I will draw for the winner after June 21st, and I'll be in contact with that listener. Either you could send me an outline of your foot so that I can fit the sock to your foot, or you can kind of give me a general idea of the size of your foot, and if you want, I can knit up to the toe decreases, wind off a whole bunch of yarn, and send that to you so you could finish knitting the toes to your specifications if you choose. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to knit both of these socks with a really generous 1x1 cuff, a nice 3x1 ribbed ankle, and a heel flap, heel turn and gusset, very traditional. And then I'm going to have my signature 1x1 ribbing under the arch of the foot and keep that 3x1 ribbing going down the top of the foot. And then your choice. I will close them, close up the toe as you decide. So I have many of you who are wonderful Ko-fi contributors and monthly contributors. I have some one-time contributors, and there's room for more. So if you're interested in receiving a pair of hand-knit socks in this beautiful 100% Dorset yarn, these are, I would say, you could machine wash gentle, because remember, we heard about Gail's experiments. She machine washed these socks. She did that 8 or 9 times with no ill effects. So I would recommend that you could machine wash these socks on a gentle cycle and then just leave them to dry, and you will have amazing, cushy, warm socks delivered to you, probably in the highest heat of summer. But maybe there'll be some cool nights, or you could set them aside for fall and winter wear. And I'm very eager to get these socks out to one of you listeners. Since my last recording, I've made a whole lot of progress on my Taproot Make 9. I'm working on the Moonshadow Table Runner by Laura Hopper. That's in issue 44, the Emerge issue. And I had gone on a little shopping trip to a local fabric and sew and vac shop with my sister Jessica to pick out the fabric for this project. The background is a gorgeous plum purple, and the moons are a really beautiful gold. And then the binding is kind of like a chocolate brown with some flecks of minty blue green. I am currently ready to begin the final step of this project, which is to hand stitch the binding to the back of the table runner. So I've been through all of the hand basting and the applique, the quilting aspect, which I messed up and then recovered. And then I watched a really amazing tutorial for applying the binding to this project. So I want to tell you a little bit about how I messed up. I appliqued the moon phases. There are five distinct pieces that go on the front of this table runner, which is the moon phases. So you can kind of imagine what that looks like. And then I applied the quilt batting and I pinned it all over the place to the backing fabric. You know, the fabric behind the applique. And then I quilted around the moons with beautiful yellow embroidery thread. And then I got my backing fabric that's like the reverse side of the table runner, which is also a beautiful deep plum purple color. I got that out and I thought, how is this really going to be attached now? I hadn't realized that what I should have been doing is quilting through all three layers when I quilted around the moons. So I had a good think about it. I talked to my sister Jessica, and I decided that instead of taking all of that quilting out and doing it again, which I could have done, I mean, it's a table runner, so it's not the end of the world. But I also came to the conclusion that quilting around five moon phases in the center of the quilt still wasn't really stabilizing this table runner and all of the layers all the way out to all the edges. There was still kind of like a flimsiness to it, even if I had done it correctly. So what I decided to do was create a grid, and I made lines between each of the moon phases, and then I also made lines above and below the moon phases, but not quite to the edge of the table runner. And then I quilted through all three layers this time, with some embroidery thread that was a perfect match to the background fabric. It was like a plummy purple color that you can see the quilting, but you really can't see the stitches that much. And that gave me really awesome coverage because there are, you know, parallel lines and horizontal lines going all the way across this project, and allowed me to shore it up and kind of make sure all of the layers were working properly. And then I started the directions for the binding. In my defense, even though the directions do say to quilt through all three layers, I checked and they do. The photographs that I was referring to did not seem to contain quilting that went all the way through the back layer. So when I was looking at the pictures, it really didn't strike me that that's what I should be doing. But, you know, I'm a novice quilter. This is a very early project, and I'm learning as I go. So far, I'm really happy with the results. I will link in the show notes to the binding tutorial that I used, because she gives a really cool trick for resolving the way you overlap your binding at the end so that it's seamless and you don't have to measure anything. And I'm hoping that I can use some form of this cool trick whenever I'm using bias binding on a garment. I haven't quite worked it out yet, but it seems like there's some potential for that to work. And if you do any kind of quilting, well, A, you probably already know about this. But if you don't, it's a really awesome tip, and I'd like to share it with you, so I'll link that in the show notes. I hope to finish with this taproot project pretty soon and start enjoying having this table runner on my dining table over the course of the summer. It's a beautiful project. I love taproot, as you know, and I've been having a lot of fun selecting some projects and intentionally going about making them. The next project that I plan to begin once this table runner is complete is worker overalls in the form of a dress. And that will be a great summer project and something that I will certainly get a lot of wear out of when I'm working around my home and garden. So stay tuned. It's May 30th. There is one more day of Me Made May. I've been wearing my hand knits and hand sewn garments as I do pretty much every day. I wear something that I have made, and I have very much enjoyed taking some photographs in my office and posting them to Instagram, where you can see them and where I'm getting some feedback from Instagram friends and listeners. I haven't done it every day. I've averaged, I guess, about 3 a week, but I've definitely seen some themes, especially for this time of year. I wear a lot of cropped sweaters over things with long lines, like dresses and tunics and things like that. That is a favorite look of mine. I've been working on color as well as neutrals in my handmade wardrobe and trying to build up some different pieces that have the same color accents, and also being a little more carefree about pairing things that don't have the exact same color but are in the same color family. This used to be incredibly difficult for me, and over time, as I've built my handmade wardrobe and I look in my closet, it's like, these are the things I have, these are the things I want to wear, I've become a little more flexible of mind in terms of what I put together. It's also helped me start to think about some pieces that I want to work on going forward. Definitely in the spring and summer, and even in the winter and fall, the Ogden cami is one of my favorite pieces. I have 4 or 5 of them at this point, and I do have some fabric for making some additional Ogden camis. This is a pattern by True Bias. I've made it many times. There is a lot of pattern support online. There are also a number of hacks. Maybe I will go so far as to try one of those pattern hacks when I make the Ogden cami. One thing that I do more recently when I make this pattern is that I cut the straps quite a bit wider than is called for, and I apply a very thin fusible interfacing to the straps before I sew them. This makes them a lot more durable. They're just sturdier and they anchor a little bit better on the shoulders. And I can machine wash them a little more easily. So one thing that was happening, because I just wore my Ogden camis so much, is that the seam in the strap would start to come undone. And I tried patching it with double-sided fusible interfacing. That worked for a while. But now when I make them, I just kind of make them with an eye toward a little more durability. And that has been very helpful. I have also lengthened the cami itself, as well as the depth of the lining inside. And I really enjoy finishing Ogden camis off with a hand-stitched rolled hem. I think it's a beautiful finish, very enjoyable to do, and it allows you to get just that much more length out of whatever fabric you have, because it really does use up a very little fabric when you compare that to a turned, folded, and sewn hem. For off the shelf today, I want to share not a poem exactly, although I think it has a very poetic spirit. It's a passage from a collection of essays that I've been reading, a collection that's a gift from a former colleague and his partner. It's Wendell Berry's The World-Ending Fire. It's a collection of essays that is edited and with an introduction. The first piece in this collection is called A Native Hill. It's a series of ruminations, some long, some short, about a hill in Kentucky. Wendell Berry is an American writer. He hails from Kentucky, rural Kentucky, still lives there. He's one of our elder American authors. And A Native Hill was first published in the Hudson Review in winter of 1968-1969. Wendell Berry is a scholar of natural things. He writes with a deep morality, but I think it's a morality that, I don't know, we could all learn a lot from at this time. Here is a little passage that I thought was beautiful in itself and also leans toward handwork that we love. The hill is like an old woman, all her human obligations met, who sits at work day after day in a kind of rapt leisure at an intricate embroidery. She has time for all things because she does not expect ever to be finished. She is endlessly patient with details. She perfects flower and leaf, feather and song, adorning the briefest life in great beauty as though it were meant to last forever. And just because I'm feeling like it today, I'm going to do the thing that Robert Bly always does when he finds a passage of great beauty. He reads it again. The hill is like an old woman, all her human obligations met, who sits at work day after day in a kind of rapt leisure at an intricate embroidery. She has time for all things. Because she does not expect ever to be finished, she is endlessly patient with details. She perfects flower and leaf, feather and song, adorning the briefest life in great beauty, as though it were meant to last forever.